Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, but we're going to be talking about something else. Not just mind power, but doggy power. For those of you that are animal lovers like I am, I know that you are going to enjoy my guest tremendously this morning. A woman whose heart is just as big as the doggy world itself, and we're going to be talking about her book, Romancing the Dog, and how a dog that she and her husband adopted from a pound whose name was Chips changed their lives dramatically, and also through this book is touching the lives of many others as well. I'd like to welcome to the airwaves Marion Zola. Marion, welcome to the show and your book, Romancing the Dog. The struggle on how to make a pound dog happy in Beverly Hills. When I saw that subtitle, I said, give me a break. Beverly Hills? You've got to be kidding.
Well, that just happens to be where we live, Donna. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I know anyone that has been a fan of movies, we always hear stories about Beverly Hills, and I've had a number of friends that have lived in that area for years, and there's a special persona with the environment. But let's talk about this fabulous dog, Chips, and you're a screenwriter, which one might think would make you very adaptable to having a dog in your environment because that canine would be able to go with you everywhere. But you're quite a busy gal.
Yes, but you know, like so many other writers, I work at my home, so I'm here most of the time, and we could keep each other company, and he didn't have to be left alone that much. And fortunately, now, Beverly Hills has many places you can take the dog and sit outside and have something to eat, and the weather is good enough to do that. And the same with Carmel, where we spend a significant amount of time, which is a very dog-friendly city with a leash-free beach, and I don't think I know too many people there who don't have a pet of some sort, usually a dog.
Now, you got Chips. Let's backstep a little bit, because part of your book is about love and romance.
Right.
It's about you and your husband, Sam,
right,
and how when you went out on a date with him, which I dearly loved this, this is how you opened your book, he really didn't have any interest in getting married again.
Right.
And he had gone through quite a period of anxiousness because of the divorce he had gone through and his dog, Daisy. Tell
right.
us
well,
a little
he
bit
was
about
going
that.
Through. He wasn't even divorced. He had only been separated 4 months when we met on a blind date, and he talked to me a lot about Daisy, his miniature poodle whom we had to leave behind. Her hearing wasn't very good, and her eyesight wasn't very good at that point, so Daisy was going to be left in the environment she knew, but he said Daisy was really his dog, and he talked all about how Daisy would sleep on her back with her paws crossed, just the way he would sleep on his back with his arms crossed and his hands crossed on his chest. And she would imitate him. And how smart she was. Daisy knew her hot dog from her hamburger. She knew all her toys by name. He would take her to wine tastings in Carmel and the surrounding area. My husband loved wine, and he used to take Daisy to all these tastings. And with a straight face, he told me that she knew, you know, she preferred Burgundy to Bordeaux and absolutely disliked Champagne and so on and so forth. And I listened to him, and I thought, well, this guy loved his dog, which
Yeah,
I
no kidding.
Very, very good sign.
Oh, absolutely. And it was funny because he ended up changing his mind, obviously, about getting married again. You became the very special lady in his life.
Eventually.
Mm-hmm. But when the time came to get a dog, because your husband is very much a dog person,
right.
You ended up going to the pound instead of going to a breeder. And
right.
Why is it you chose to go to your local animal shelter rather than buying a purebred?
Well, first of all, just to be accurate, the dog was taken from the shelter by this local rescue group, and we saw him there, but he had just been out of the shelter a couple of days. I would never, ever, ever buy a dog, Donna, because there are literally millions of wonderful dogs being put to death every year in the United States simply because there aren't enough people to adopt them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dogs end up in the shelter for ridiculous reasons. Last week on my favorite local radio show, The Pet Show, Warren Eckstein was talking about this a man who recently surrendered his dog to a shelter because he said he was gay. There was an article in the New York Times a few years ago where a reporter had sat and watched people come in and give their dogs to the shelter one afternoon, and some of the reasons were so ridiculous. One gentleman came in and said, he doesn't match my furniture. One woman said, my dog is boring. I mean, ridiculous things. A lot of times people adopt dogs for their, or get a dog for their children, and the children end up ignoring the dog, and the mother doesn't have time to take care of it. And wonderful, wonderful dogs. You can really find any kind of dog you want at the shelter or rescue group, and they're all listed under Pet Finder.
Mm-hmm.
Every breed has its own rescue organization, German Shepherd Rescue, Poodle Rescue, Beagle Rescue, all of them. So I don't see any reason why anybody would buy a dog when you can save a life. And the shelters and rescue groups really want to make sure these dogs never have this experience again. They try to match people with the right pet. And if there are any problems, they find you a trainer, or they help you, and they never, ever want you to give that dog up. They say, if you're going to give the dog up, give it back to us. But
I agree with that, and that is something. We have Scottish Terriers, and my listeners know that, and we have gone through rescue groups, and it has been just absolutely wonderful. But I want to get back to you and Chips. And that was what you named this ball of fluff.
Right.
I'll use that description. How in the world did you choose this dog? I love to hear stories about how the dog chooses you or the person is attracted to the dog, because there's definitely a bond. I've had a number of experiences with animals where they let you know they're not interested in being with you, or, okay, you're mine. What
right.
happened with you and Chips?
Well, according to what I had promised my husband, he wanted another poodle because that's who he had had a good experience with. So most people want the same kind of dog they've already loved. So I said, fine, I'll find a poodle. And we went all over looking for a poodle. And a rescue organization in the area called me and said, we heard you looking for a poodle. We have a miniature poodle. Who we just taken to the hospital for shots, and she's being groomed, and you can see her later today. And I said, fine. I went over there, and I looked, and she looked wonderful. She was a miniature poodle. She was brown. She was adorable. And I called the lady, and I said, you know, this dog looks fine, but I'd like my husband to see her before we take her, and he's in a meeting. He won't be available till after 2 o'clock. Is that okay? She said, fine, but also while you're there, I'd like you to look at the poodle mix and the cage in the back. I said, okay. So I went outside to this cage and looked at this dog, who was definitely, definitely not a poodle anything, but she'd said he was a poodle mix, so I looked, and this dog was lying in the cage, curled up. He'd been shorn. He was totally short-haired. They'd taken all his fur off because it had been so matted, and he looked so sad. And when I came over to the cage, I had a visor and sunglasses on, and he kind of growled a little. So I took off my visor and my glasses, and I bent down, and I said hello. And immediately he put his paws on the side of the cage, and he looked at me. He slightly wagged his tail because he wasn't feeling well, I guess. And his eyes looked into mine, and we both fell in love instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I started talking to him, and he looked like he really wanted to get to me, and I did want to see him outside that cage, but I had promised my husband a poodle. And
mm-hmm.
I said, you're obviously not a poodle. But I said, I'll talk to Sam when I get home. And I had to walk away from that cage, and it was very hard. And I said to him, I hope I'll be back. And I turned around, and I saw his little disappointed face looking at me with his big brown eyes. And I walked away, which was not easy. And on the way home, I'm thinking, maybe I can talk Sam into two dogs. Because I promised him the poodle. And
don't
when
you
I got
love
home,
it the way we women think? I'll tell
that's
you.
Right.
Maybe I can do this.
That's right.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
First, I told him to go look at the poodle. And I called Nancy, who was the head of the organization, and I said, he's going over there. And she said, oh, Marion, I'm sorry, she's gone. I said, what do you mean she's gone? You said, I told you I thought we'd take her. And she said, well, one of the volunteers saw on the chart that she'd once bitten a man, so I gave her to two women.
Mm-hmm.
She actually said, I gave her to two lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, fine. I said, at least she got a home, but what am I going to do? She said, well, why don't you tell your husband to look at the poodle mix in the cage outside? I said, okay. Now, I knew that this was no poodle anything. But I was quoting her, wasn't I? I
mm-hmm.
figured that was legitimate. So
absolutely. Totally logical.
I told him exactly what happened. And I just said to him, she said, why don't you look at the poodle mix? Well, he went and he came back. And I said, well, what'd you think? He said, I don't know. He was funny looking. He had a big head and a skinny body and didn't look much like a poodle to me. He said, but if you want him, you can have him. So I thought, well, I wanted him to be a little more enthusiastic than that. I said, did you take him out? He said, yeah, I took him out for a walk, and he didn't pay a bit of attention to me. I said, well, why should he pay attention to you? You have one more stranger who came by. He doesn't know he'll ever see you again. So we went back the following day when he was going to be shown for adoption with the rest of his compatriots on a street corner in Santa Monica. And we went back and we walked him. And I thought, this is definitely the dog for us. And I said, what do you think? He said, well, if you want him, it's okay with me, but he sure doesn't look like a poodle. I said, well, he looks nice, though, doesn't he? He said, yes. There was a paraplegic dog there who he had felt sorry for, but the dog was 80 pounds. I felt
oh my
sorry
goodness.
For him, too. And you had to carry him up the stairs. And both of us had some back problems. And I didn't think we could carry an 80-pound dog up the stairs. So we decided to adopt Chips, not knowing what he was. And you know the rest of the story.
Well, I was fascinated with the fact that he actually was a purebred dog.
Right.
And he was a Tibetan Terrier. Tell us about Tibetan Terriers. I'm not familiar with them at all. I'm obviously more familiar with it now because of your book. But
well,
this is a very special breed.
Yes, they were brought to the United States first in the 50s. They had been introduced in England first by a traveler who had gone to Tibet. These dogs would live with the monks in those snowy mountains, so they have a thick double coat. They have a curled tail, long-haired, sometimes straight hair, sometimes wavy. Chips was wavy, so you had to be careful about matting. And they were never sold, but only given as gifts to other travelers because they were considered symbols of good luck. And they're very good-natured dogs, very people-oriented, happy dogs, and very, very good-natured with big paws. They are look like they're in the same family as sheepdogs, bearded collies, and Havanese. They are in the middle in terms of size. Mm-hmm. They're usually between 25 and 30 pounds. Some of them are a little smaller. Some of them are a little bigger. But that's the general size. They have long hair, which will go over their eyes, just like a sheepdog if you let it grow. They're not like Jack Russell Terriers, very energetic and quick and eager to learn a new trick every 5 minutes. But they are very good-natured. They love to be with the family. They consider themselves members of the family. They don't like to be left alone, I must say. Mm-hmm. This is not a good dog if you have to be out of the house and leave him for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. They dislike being alone, but they love people. They love other dogs. And even though Chips would like to play with other dogs and was very friendly, within a very short time, he turned his attention back to us. He really wasn't that other dog-oriented. Mm-hmm. He really preferred people.
Now, what's fun is in your book, you go into some real humorous situations about how what happened after you get the dog. And, of course, anybody who is a dog lover realizes that dogs are magnets for other people. And anyone that goes anywhere, if you have a dog, people always want to know about it. I just finished doing a women's show, and the first thing that was drawing attraction in the show for the women was the sound of a barking Labrador, which was a puppy. He was 4 months old, and he was in this one booth where they were showing how to train dogs and how to give them discipline, etc. Within a matter of minutes, there was like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 women over these dogs just adoring them. There was this baby shepherd, and the response was just absolutely amazing. And your story in here about a guy who wanted to know if he could borrow your dog because he had just recently gotten divorced and wanted to attract women into his life.
That is so true.
I love that. And you said, well, this dog is very expensive to rent out. I thought that is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
I took him over to Saks Fifth Avenue. I had to pick up a lipstick or something, and I was in the makeup department, and this beautiful bunch of makeup gals came over, and they were all making such a fuss over him and asking me all about him and just going bananas over him. And this guy saw this, and he said, oh, my God, I have to get one of these. And you know, as a dog guardian, that whenever you go out with a dog, it's so easy to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a sweet or friendly dog, people just talk to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, Donna, I wrote a book many years ago called All the Good Ones Are Married. And I am sometimes asked by women friends, you know, where is a good place to meet people? And I say, go to a dog park. Or,
without question.
Right?
Without question.
And you can really tell a man's character by how he treats his dog.
And that's something. Speaking of character, you go into many different stories about your husband and how he responded to the dog. And, of course, he had been so attached to Daisy that here is this little tiny thing that you brought home that was obviously underfed, had been abused, and had to be nurtured. And your husband really, really formed a bond with
When we got Chips,
was so special.
He had, when we got the dog, he had worms, a kennel cough, and an ear infection. And, you know, we had to take care of those, and we had to put in the ear drops. And after a short time, he got very sick of it. The dog did. And he didn't want me to flip up his ear and put in these things. And he was, he had a very strong head and a strong neck, and it was very difficult to do alone. And I needed Sam to help me hold him. So it became a two-parent job, and he chipped right in and helped me and made it much easier. And through the years, he really became Chip's protector as much as I was. And there was a lot of protecting to do at various times, as you know, from having read the book.
Oh, yes, I do. Now, I want to share a cute story about Chip. And you can just imagine, this dog weighs about 25 pounds, 26 pounds, has this wonderful coat. They're out going to buy a car. You had decided you wanted to get a Saab. And, of course, you take Chips along to see how Chips is going to respond to the car. Now, some of you listening to this may say, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why in the world would you give a hoot about whether the dog likes a car or not? It's for you. You're buying the car. Well, believe it or not, when you have a pet that is really, really special to you, one of the things that dogs love to do is look out the window. You want to make sure that the animal is going to be comfortable in the vehicle, especially if you're going to do a lot of driving. I know. I have an old Cadillac. I don't want to give up because my dogs love the ledge in the Cadillac window in the back. It's an old model car. And they are up there. They're happy as they can be. That's their second home, traveling home, relative to the first one. So I totally related to this. But I loved the story about when you were in the parking lot and another couple had a 250-pound pig, and they were wanting to get... You've got to share this. I mean, this isn't something you make up, folks. This is
real.
No, this really happened. You've got to tell the story about Chips and
this
pig.
The reason we took Chips with us is we wanted to make sure he could jump into the back. We wanted to make sure it wasn't so high that he couldn't jump in, because he can't jump into an SUV seat. But he's very clever, and when he had to go into an SUV with a walker at one time, he just jumped into the floor and then jumped on the seat. But we wanted to see if the seat was the right height for him to jump in the back, so we didn't have to pick him up constantly. We were trying to save what was left of our backs, so we took him. And there was another couple there looking at their own car, to buy their own car, and they were looking at kind of a station wagon type Saab. And they had brought a ramp to see if their pet could get into the car, but their pet was a 250-pound pig, one of the smaller breeds. And Chips saw this animal, kind of sniffed a little closer, but stopped at one point. I guess it didn't smell like a dog, and Mommy wouldn't let him go any closer because I didn't know how friendly this pig was or wasn't. So we stopped at a certain point. But this couple was trying to get the pig to go up the ramp, and she wouldn't go. And the back door of this vehicle was open, and everybody was clucking and encouraging this pig to take a few steps and go up the ramp. She wouldn't go. Chips jumped into the back of the car, which was open, and he started barking at her, and barking and barking. And finally, she put one hoof after another on this ramp and started going up. And as she got close to the top of the ramp, Chips jumped out of the car. I guess he figured he'd done his job. He wasn't going to get any closer, And everybody was so excited. This couple did take the car. We took our sedan. They took this station wagon, and the salesman was thrilled with the whole thing.
Yeah, he said Chips can come back for a cookie anytime. He made
right,
the sale.
Right.
I just
so
love
I thought
that.
He did a good
yeah.
job.
He did, and it shows how animals do communicate. There's a lot of things we don't understand about them.
Right.
Now, one of the things I wanted to bring out, because what we're going to be talking about for the next few minutes is very, very real. There is a major problem in California with this, and we have it up here, and that is dogs and coyotes. And up here, every year, there are particular seasons where we will see signs all over the place, my dog has disappeared, my cat has died, let me know if you see it. Well, having lived in the Pacific Northwest for as many years as we have, we're aware of the coyote and
right.
how the coyotes will, that's their food source. So
right.
if cats are roaming, they're fair game. And
right.
if you have little dogs out there, anything that's under 30 pounds, sometimes over 30 pounds, if there's
right.
a pack hunting, they'll take it down
right.
if they sense any weakness. And so this is something we've had neighbors that have told us that they've seen them wandering at night, which
right.
is when they will hunt. And that is the reality of it. And you have that challenge in Beverly Hills. And I remembered when I lived in California, a number of friends that lived in Tahunga, et cetera, were very concerned because the coyotes would come in, and I knew more than one person that had lost their animals. Tell us about what people can do and what they need to be aware of with this, to just not assume that just because they've got a fence in the around the backyard that their animals are safe.
Right. We found out, unfortunately, from my brother-in-law, whose dog was attacked by a coyote when she went out the doggy door in the middle of the night to pee, that they can jump 12 feet from a standing position.
So incredible.
So if you have an 8 or 9 foot fence, that isn't sufficient. We never let Chips out at night in the backyard for his final restroom visit without one of us there. Because when we first moved to this area, when we live in the hills, which is where they come. They come
mm-hmm.
down from the top of the hills. We would hear some screaming at night of a cat or a small dog. We don't know where it came from, but some neighbor, I guess, who had an animal that was out at night. And it would last just a few seconds, but it was unmistakable. And then when we began to see coyotes, and we don't see a lot of them, but especially in the hot weather when it's very dry in the hills, they do come down.
Mm-hmm.
We would see them occasionally, even on my block. And we fortunately never saw one in our backyard, but we did see them on other properties. And you have to be very careful. We never left Chips out alone unless he was on the side of the house, which is right outside my office window, and I can see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't inclined to go. He was a real mama's boy, and if I didn't have the door open to my office, he wouldn't even go outside. He liked to sit right outside the door. And if he wandered around a little bit, I could see him. So we just kept an eye on him and made sure that he wasn't food for the coyotes.
Absolutely. Marianne Zola, your book, Romancing the Dog, has so many wonderful stories in it. And anyone that is a lover of our four-pawed furry friends, you just absolutely will really enjoy this book. And, of course, he's just so precious, the picture of him on the cover with his face. I can see why he stole your heart so easily and readily. Romancing the Dog, for those of you that would be interested in exploring this book more, check out romancingthedog.com. And one of the things that Marion wanted me to mention, which we have already to a degree, and that is whenever you want to adopt a dog, whenever you're thinking of bringing a dog in, don't always just look at what's cute. Really look at the breed. Look at what the personality traits are. If they're high maintenance, like the Tibetan Terrier is, very high maintenance dog, that may not work for you. You really need to be alert and aware of the type of dog you have. And remember, the rescue organizations, they're just phenomenal. They sincerely care. And Marion, I understand you're doing foster care right now. I know we're out of time, but I'm so grateful that we've been able to chat.
Donna, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. And again, be sure to check out her website, romancingthedog.com. Marion Zola is the author. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just
a
moment.
Thank you so
much. Don't go away. You're welcome.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you that are listening to the broadcast for the first time, all I need from you is your first name or initial. That's right. And then after that, I'll give you my mental impressions. And, of course, you'll be welcome to ask a question about anything of interest to you. Tomorrow, we are going to be talking about the Ultimate Consignment and the Thrift Store Guide. A wonderful woman by the name of Carolyn Schneider has put this phenomenal book together. And in today's environment, so many of us are looking for bargains. Well, let me tell you, this gal has got a list of places that you can go to around the country and the world. That's right, whether you're in Italy, Australia, Africa, doesn't make any difference. She's got the scoop. Also, we're going to be talking about the reluctant donor. I'll be having as a guest a woman who will be discussing how she ended up becoming a kidney donor. So that's coming up. And ready when you are, well, we're going to be finding out how we are going to be able to make our lives better by being ready when you are. This is Donna Sebald. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share with you a couple of thoughts, and then I'm going to be giving out some different information, but I have found through the years in my involvement in working with dogs and being around people who have done training and been involved in different environments, whenever we're a caretaker for another creature, it is so important for us to try to be as educated as possible. But you know what happens when you get involved with different creatures? I don't care if it's a horse, a dog, a cat, a ferret, a bird. It doesn't make any difference. You find that your world expands. And one of the biggest gifts that they give you is an understanding that you can rely on your intuition. And I strongly believe in telepathy. Of course, that's a part of my life, a part of my work. But at the women's show that I participated in this last weekend, we had as a speaker, one of the speakers at the women's forum, a woman by the name of Jo Raquette, and she is an animal communicator. And this started with her in a way that she had never imagined. Well, not only did Joan talk about how you have to learn how to be aware and how to listen differently, you become an observer. You end up using all of your senses. And she especially has a very strong bond with horses. And this was, she had a particular horse that taught her about this. And when she learned certain things about this horse, there was a bond of communication that enabled her to shift into a whole new modality in her life. I also had as one of my speakers, Vaughn Martin. And Vaughn works with huskies, and he does mushing. And he would talk about how the animals, when he was preparing for the serum race, were really an extended part of his family. And he said when it came to working with them on a team, after I asked him the question, how do you choose which dog is the lead dog? Where do you place them in positioning? Because your team consists of 12 dogs that have to work together with a harmony and a rhythm so that you're going to move forward. And he said the animals let you know. They tell you where they want to be. And the bond that this man has with Chewy, one of his lead huskies that he brought into the show, was really something very special. And when you're around animals like this, you'll find that there's an instant communication, not unlike what we experience sometimes with people. Have you ever walked into a room and there is someone that you come in contact with and it's just like the hackle on the back of your neck goes up, so to speak? This is what we describe with dogs. We'll see the hair stand up on the back of the neck. Well, the same thing happens with we humans. We'll get this, this isn't so good. And yet there'll be someone else that we may meet that same evening that within 30 seconds we're having a conversation with them, though they're a perfect stranger. We're totally at ease with them. You're reading them. You're reading people. Animals do the same thing. Animals have an awareness. They have to, because they do not necessarily have the vocalization capacity that we have, but they have different ways of communicating. So it's so special to me when we have a chance to share the stories of people and their pets, and also if they're trainers, what they've learned, what they've experienced, and how the animals have made a difference in their lives. I think when we can honor and respect that, we'll have a respect for just about everything in life, realizing that we're all interconnected. When we treat the creatures of this earth with violence and brutality, it comes around to us eventually. Because that's how we're going to be treating each other. And it doesn't necessarily fare well. So sometimes we need to really look with a very careful eye at how we take care, not just of ourselves, but the creatures we share this planet with, because it does make a difference. It does have that ripple effect, if you will, that touches everything, sort of like the Energizer Bunny. It keeps going, going, and going. It's a fascinating phenomenon. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Speaking of animals, I don't know if you've ever heard the story about how elephants have been trained to serve mankind. I'm sure you've seen different programs, but there is a story, and it's been adapted in many different ways, where there was someone that observed elephants at a circus, and the elephants, as massive as they are, were kept in place by a little tiny wooden stake and a thin rope. And the observer was curious because the elephant had no desire to break away from this. Very easily tethered. Well, dogs necessarily will not be comfortable with that. Well, he asked the trainer what prevented these huge, huge, intelligent and powerful animals from just taking off and snapping the rope. Obviously, they could do that. I mean, it's no big deal. The trainer said the elephants are tied with a very strong rope from the time that they're very young because they're small and weak when they're young, obviously. And they become accustomed to being tethered. When they're young, they try to break the tether, but obviously because they're small and they don't have that full strength, they come to the positioning of belief that they cannot break it. And he said, consequently, when they are fully grown, they won't do anything to try to get away. They have the memory of the pain of the rope being tethered and how ineffective they were against it. How many times do we do that with ourselves? I had an encounter just recently with an individual, a woman, who is tethered in her thinking. She is so full of fear. And I thought this experience that I had with her afterwards, it was quite a gift. It showed me how we become tethered in our own lives because of fears that we have accepted as a reality, as a part of our belief system, when we were younger or at some point in our life. Had anyone ever said to you, oh, nobody's ever going to want you because of this, thus, that, or so. Or, you're stupid. There's just no way anybody can teach you anything. Has anybody ever said things like that to you? Well, let me tell you, that had been said to me. That had been said to me when I was younger, and so many times I think back, as a mature woman now, I can think back and realize how that affected my self-worth. The people that made these statements to me were the very significant people in my life. And I remember them laughing at me. And I remember them making comments. It took a lot of years for me to realize that these were just people in my life at that age. That somehow or another, I needed to find out who the real Donna was. And I needed to take my place in life as an individual, as a human being that was capable of many, many things. I have to chuckle today because many of my friends call me Superwoman, which just makes me laugh because that's so much fun. There's no such thing really as a superwoman. Super in the capacity of skills, which is a wonderful thing, and so many of us are. But how many times do we demean ourselves? How many times do we allow our mental thoughts to tether us to a stick of immobility, a stick of belief that's so tiny, but yet so powerful, because we don't believe we can pull that stick up, squash it, be free to be who we want to be. When I had the experience with this individual and I saw this person's fear, and after having the opportunity of spending a full entire day with this individual, and them saying at the end of the day, wow, I really enjoyed myself in an environment that they normally would never have been a part of, I thought, aha, there's the lesson learned. So my suggestion to you is today, if there's something you've always had an interest in, I don't care what your age is, I don't care what your IQ is, I don't care what your education is, it doesn't make any difference. If you've always wanted to learn how to do sushi, for heaven's sakes, go take the class. If you want to do bungee jumping, go learn bungee jumping. Try it. Maybe you'll like it. Maybe you'll hate it. Who cares? Step out of your zone. Try new foods. Read books on subjects you've never explored before. Maybe volunteer to help with an organization. Be in an environment that maybe a long time ago you had a curiosity about. So many times we become stagnant because we're afraid. Not because life doesn't have a lot to offer us, but because we become afraid of what we don't know. And I'll tell you something. Through my years of counseling, I've encountered so many people who, because of their fears, became imprisoned into a box of their own making. Not because the world made it happen to them. They created their own prison, their own box. And it's not until you knock out a wall, pop off the ceiling, and say, I have the right to explore, and I'm going to be fine, that you'll realize you've got a lot more to live in this life and a lot more to enjoy. Donna Sebo here. When we come back, I'm going to be sharing some zodiac information for you for this spring period of 2013. So if you're an Aries, a Taurus, maybe even a Gemini, I'll try to get to those three signs when we come back. Donna Sebo here. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, is 888-627-6008. Quick like a bunny, for those of you in Western Washington, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Emerald Spiral Expo in Kent, Washington. And if you'd like information on it, and that is going to be March 30th, which is a Saturday. It's a one-day event. Family is welcome. My goodness, it is just wonderful. There's going to be all kinds of vendors. But more than that, it's a very intimate environment. And it's an environment where if you've ever wanted to talk to a massage energy therapist, you're going to have a chance to do that. If you want to just chat with someone about psychic abilities, classes, training, you name it, you're going to have a chance to do that. People in this event, and I've been participating in this for years, they're warm, they're open, they're friendly, and it's free to the public. So come on in if you can. Check out emeraldspiral.com. Okay, let's get down to some zodiac information for those of you under the sign of Aries. This is for springtime. Love. Well, that's something that we all like to have in our lives. I want you to know, those of you under the sign of Aries, this is a time for you to welcome new friendships. This is a time for you to welcome new associations. Your world needs to have that personal one-on-one environment. And you know what? You're going to have a chance to develop some very special relationships with some new people in your life. This is a time for you to be open and receptive to this. People that might be strangers one moment may end up becoming beloved friends. And maybe that Mr. or Ms. Special that you want in your life. Money? Well, you're going to have to really work on your financial planning. For those of you under the sign of Aries, discipline is the key to your financial success. And you need to know that you have an opportunity to really move forward in a career direction. But planning, thinking, organizing, and if necessary, going to school, whatever it takes for you to upgrade your skills, this is the year to do it in. And within 2 years, maybe less, you'll be able to reach objectives. But you must expand yourself. And you're going to find that you're going to have itchy feet. You really want to visit some interesting places. You're a powerful sign. You're very strong, very energetic. Check out new things. Don't stay tethered to a little tiny stick of monotony. Your life is going to be expanding in a wonderful way. For those of you born under the sign of Taurus, family, home is your focus. You like your nest to be happy, healthy, and happy. You just absolutely love your home and your family. Now, you've got to be aware that sometimes you may have to step out of that environment periodically. You're always going to welcome people into it, but step into other people's spaces occasionally so that you can expand your world. Now, you are going to find yourself excited about really moving forward in the job environment. I want you to know that you, under the sign of Taurus, you're the type of person that's dependable. People know they can rely on you. So being born under the sign of Taurus, many times you can be bullheaded and stubborn, obviously, but this is something that if you use it wisely can serve you well. So be patient. If you're job hunting, put your best personality and smile forward. Be who you are. Let them know that you take pride in who you are and what you do. And I don't think you'd have a problem getting a job. And if you're going to have a business of your own, those qualities of strength, durability, reliability, consistency are what your customers are going to want most from you. Traveling, well, you might want to do some of it, but apparently you need to really take care of yourself physically. You have a tendency to think that just like a bull, you can go on and on and on and on. Well, even the bull has to go to sleep every once in a while. Take care of yourself. Make sure that you're getting the rest you need and that you're eating properly for yourself. And the last one for today is Gemini. My goodness. You are going to find that there are many older people that are going to be coming into your environment, and you have a side of yourself that really has an empathy for the older generation, and I think it wouldn't be surprising at all if in your family you have the best communication skills with what we would describe as the elderly members, and you like to have harmony. You don't like disharmony in your world at all. So being a go-between sometimes is what you like to do, but choose your, mediation position carefully. You don't want to be between a hornet's nest and, you know, a whatever nest. You just have to be very, very thoughtful here. You don't want to get in the middle of something that is really going to be toxic for you. So choose your situation thoughtfully and carefully. When it comes to money, you can make a penny dance. And this is good. And I would encourage you to learn as much as you can about different areas of investment, because that is going to enable you to see how, with proper planning, you can ensure your own financial future. And I want you to pay attention to your dreams. You need to know that your dreams are a window into your own inner wisdom. Now, you may only remember snippets of dreams instead of long scripts. Don't worry about that. Whatever your recall is, write it down, and you're going to find that it's going to be giving you a lot of insight into yourself, and it'll help you develop your own intuitive processes as well. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're just about out of time. Tomorrow, hey, we're going to tell you where you can go to get the ultimate in quality, whatever it is that you're interested in, consignment shops, thrift shops. I'm telling you, my guest, Carolyn Schneider, is an amazing woman. I don't know how she found out what she did, but she did. And we're going to be sharing it with you right here on the Donna Sebo, on the Donna Sebo Show. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be like a well-trained elephant. You don't want to be tethered to what you don't want. You, too, can break the rope that binds you and stand free. Enjoy your wonderful day. It's a good day to be alive. Talk with you tomorrow. Donna Sebo here. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.